Welcome in. Welcome back to another episode of the Format Podcast. Got a pretty interesting show for you here today. Going to talk some NBA and Kevin Durant and what's going on there, man. I don't even know, but I'm excited to share my thoughts with you on the topic. But before we get to that, you know what time it is.
If you're here on YouTube and you haven't already, please make sure you go ahead, click that like, that subscribe, that notification bell. Make sure you're kept up to date whenever we drop new content on the channel. If you want the audio-only version of the podcast, open up your audio podcast platform, hit the search bar, type in The Format Podcast, and we should come right up. If you're enjoying the content, make sure you give us that like, that five-star review, and drop a comment. All that stuff helps us rise in the algorithm, helps us find more sports fans, helps more sports fans find us. And finally, make sure you write it down, put it in your phone, set an alarm, do whatever you got to do to remember. Saturday nights at 7 p.m. we are live here on the Format Podcast, and we'll give you the opportunity to call in, talk to us, get at me. I love it. I can't wait.
All right, so NBA playoff time, and definitely, it's pretty exciting. There's some great games going on. Definitely getting the opportunity to see some amazing players, and that's what we love, right? But let's start here. The round mound to rebound, Charles Barkley. Anybody remember this guy? Next up, the human highlight film himself, Dominique Wilkins. Just an animal, a freak in the open court. Tracy McGrady, T-Mac. One of the deadliest offensive players we've ever seen. Patrick Ewing, dominant, formerly the Hoya Destroyer, then the leader of the New York Knicks for 15 years. Just awesome on both sides of the floor. And of course, John Stockton and Karl Malone, maybe one of the deadliest 1-2 punches in the history of the NBA. Now, why am I bringing up all these guys and show you highlights of these guys? Because all these guys are all-time great players. And we talk about them and we talk about how great they were. Karl Malone, I think, is the third leading scorer in the history of the NBA. John Stockton is the all-time assist leader by a mile. Charles Barkley, all these guys are Hall of Famers, by the way. Charles Barkley, just an incredible player, former MVP, much like Karl Malone, former MVP. Tracy McGrady, Kobe Bryant talked about how great he was and how deadly he was as a player. So I'm bringing up these guys too. Patrick Ewing, we mentioned him, just a dominant defensive player and offensive player, probably a top 10 center all time, and a guy who probably doesn't get his due because he kept running into Michael Jordan in the East, and Michael Jordan he kept a lot of guys from getting their due, championships and their due, because they kept running into him and losing. But at the end of the day, the reason I'm bringing all these players up to you is because these are all-time great NBA basketball players, but we don't remember them the way we should because they didn't win championships. And so what does this have to do with Kevin Durant? Because Kevin Durant is an all-time great NBA basketball player, an incredible skill guy, more so on the offensive end than the defensive end. Not saying he doesn't defend, but that's not really his particular wheelhouse. If he puts his mind to it, he'd probably be an even more elite defender because of his length and quickness and athleticism in general. But his weapons are in his offensive toolkit, his quote-unquote bag. You know that term LeBron hates so much? Wonder why he hates the term bag so much. Anyway, but yeah, Kevin Durant, one of the most unstoppable one-on-one players of all time. Well, maybe not of all time, but definitely in his era. So anyway, the reason I'm bringing that up is because if Kevin Durant never went to Golden State, if Golden State didn't open their doors to Kevin Durant and say, okay, NBA, you decided to screw us with the BS suspension of Draymond in the finals against LeBron and the Cavs, and then you lifted LeBron up and you keep pushing this, he's the only player ever to come back from down 1-3 in the NBA finals and blah, blah, blah. They said, okay, we got you. Our turn. And so they went and got Kevin Durant. They added a nuclear weapon to a team that was already deadly as the Ranger Battalion. And then they added Kevin Durant and pretty much became unstoppable. Won back-to-back championships, probably would have won one or two more if not for injuries. And so I'm talking about Kevin Durant and referencing those other guys I mentioned at the beginning of this video, because if not for the Warriors opening up their doors to him and Kevin Durant, let's face it, following the LeBron method and the LeBron playbook of, super teaming it up, well, Kevin Durant would be one of those guys we talk about in terms of being all-time great, but not having a championship. And I bring all this up because Kevin Durant went to Golden State, obviously won the two championships, and then he left there. He said he didn't feel like he was ever going to get the respect he was due because that was Steph Curry's team. I don't know if he didn't know that before. And then you hear about him not necessarily always liking the style of basketball that they played there, and we'll get to more on that later. Very interesting, because he said some other stuff that directly flew in the face of that. But again, we'll get to that later. We're talking about Kevin Durant then leaving Golden State, and he goes to the Brooklyn Nets, where he teams up with James Harden and Kyrie Irving. And well, there were different things that played into that there. Kyrie's extended absence due to his beliefs and not wanting to get the jab in terms of the COVID vaccine, James Harden having injuries, et cetera, et cetera. Kevin Durant not being able to win a championship in Brooklyn, as was expected when you put that three together. Then, of course, Kyrie Irving gets traded to Dallas. He's now playing with Luka Doncic. And Kevin Durant decides he's no longer happy in Brooklyn. He now wants out of there. He asks for a trade, gets sent to Phoenix, okay? Then Phoenix puts together their super team, another super team, mind you, with Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, and of course, Kevin Durant. Okay, so you got these three now, three elite wing players, three elite wing scorers. Okay, cool. So you got that now. And that hasn't gone well, culminating in last night getting swept 4-0 by the Minnesota Timberwolves and a young Anthony Edwards. And shouts to Anthony Edwards and the T-Wolves. The T-Wolves have not won a championship, They hadn't won a playoff series prior to last night since for the last 20 years, since 2004. So this is now we see the T-Wolves kind of developing, putting a team together, building that thing. And now we see them knocking off this super team of the Suns. So now you're starting to wonder, okay, what's next with Durant? What's going on with Durant? Why can't Durant get it done? Why is there always something going on wherever he ends up? Now, Durant is not a troublemaker. Durant is not a cancer. Durant is an outstanding player, but he's kind of a wanderer. And we'll get to all that. But I was listening to ESPN Unsportsmanlike with Chris Canty, Michelle Smallman, and Evan Cohen this morning, and they had a lot of interesting things to say. So the clip was kind of long, so I cut that up into about three parts. So what I'm going to do is play each part, come back, discuss it, give my thoughts on it, and then we'll go forward from there. All right, so here's the first part. Chris Canty, Evan Cohen, and Michelle Smallman, ESPN Unsportsmanlike. Check it out.
Relative to the star power on this team, the money required to have that star power there, and the expectations, this is wildly disappointing for so many reasons. And the fact that they were going into this and the Suns had beaten Minnesota in all three of their matchups in the regular season. So you thought at least that they would be a little bit more competitive than this. But Booker, Durant, and Beal, the Suns were minus 51 when the three of them shared the floor in this series, guys. It was a disappointment all the way around. And even though Frank Vogel is saying that he's confident in his job security, it feels like when you have a collection of stars up to this magnitude with this much money that's at stake, someone is going to have to pay the consequences for this. And also, it breeds more questions that we have about Kevin Durant and about his ability to be the guy, the number one guy and the leader on a team.
Okay, so interesting comments there by Michelle Smallman to kind of open up the segment. And the first thing that stuck out to me was Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, minus 51 together on the floor this series. That's crazy. Clearly, they don't know how to play well together. And clearly, Frank Vogel, I don't know what he was or wasn't doing in terms of putting together a system that would work well for these guys. I think Bradley Beal is a guy who probably can play, you know, off ball and within a system. They don't have a true point guard, a guy to run things and distribute and get guys in position and get the ball and all that good stuff. They don't have any of that. Devin Booker is kind of running the point, but, you know, he's a pure shooting guard. And then, of course, you have Kevin Durant, who is a pure small forward, just a bucket getter in the truest sense of the word. So you don't really have any real system running. They want to run more pick and roll, and you'll hear that later. And Kevin Durant is not the biggest fan of that. But that minus 51 really hit me. And then the other thing, she kind of ends that little part of the clip by talking about KD not demonstrating that he's the guy and being a leader. So my question is, at what point are we going to stop expecting KD to demonstrate that he's the guy and be a leader? That's not really something he is. He's told us that before. That's not something he really wants to be. And it's weird because he told us he's not, but then he tells us he kind of doesn't like being looked at like he's not one. So I'm not sure what's going on there. I think in those comments, he was just kind of succumbing to the pressure of people getting on him about not being a leader. But when you're generally seen as the best player on a team, you're probably supposed to take some type of leadership. Now, the best player on a team is not always a leader, but you should take some leadership responsibility. And if you go back on my channel, I've talked about this. I did a show with Kevin Durant and him talking about being a leader but not being a leader is really weird. He's clearly not a leader. At the end of the day, no matter what he says or doesn't say, he is not a leader. He's a guy that just wants to go out and hoop. And it's weird because if you want to win on the highest level, or you want to be recognized as the guy, you have to be more than just a guy who goes out and hoops. And this is something I talked about. So clearly he's not a leader. He told us he's not. But then in the same clip, he told us he is. So I'm really not sure how he wants us to look at him. Is he a leader? Is he not? But I don't think it matters, again, what he says, because clearly we see that he's not. That's demonstrative of what he's been throughout his career. The other thing, rarely do you see a leader who is a poor decision maker. And to me, I think he's a poor decision maker. And that's not saying that he's not smart or whatever. He just doesn't seem to make the best decisions, especially in reference to his basketball future, because he was in Golden State. He was winning. He went there, and then he starts saying, you know, he's not happy. He doesn't feel like he's ever going to get the respect because that's Steph's team. Again, how you don't know that going in is beyond me, but okay, that's Steph's team. Even though he went there and got busy, he was arguably the best player on the team, won the two finals MVPs. Okay, cool. Again, had he stayed healthy, he probably would have won more championships and more finals MVPs. But then he decides to leave a beautiful position and a great spot. And we've often heard the saying, the grass is not always greener on the other side. And this is a clear demonstration of that. He goes, he teams up with his buddies. He goes to Brooklyn. That doesn't work out. Then he decides he wants out of there. He goes to Phoenix. That doesn't work out. So the question is going to be like, what's next? All right. So here's the next part of the segment from Unsportsmanlike this morning.
The Phoenix Suns have an estimated luxury tax bill of $104 million next year. $104 million.
For those who don't get that, that's an add-on to the actual salary
yes.
that they're playing.
So their salary is $200 million, but then you plus, add on another right, $104 million right, right. in taxes.
That's the tip.
If you're Matt Ishbia, I know you're rich. I know you're a billionaire. I get it. The Billionaires Boys Club. Now how the hell can you justify that amount on the luxury tax if your team is getting swept in the first round?
I'm glad you named names on this because I want to defend a couple of people here. First off, I want to defend James Jones, the general manager. There's no chance in hell he put this team together.
No.
This was Ishbia, the governor of the team. This was him coming in, new owner. I have to make a move immediately. I have to get Kevin Durant. I got no issue with getting Kevin Durant, obviously. Even though you gave up good players, Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson. Doesn't matter. It's Kevin Durant. The problem is Ishbia's got Isaiah Thomas in his ear, which is absurd. And they, over the summers, think, hey, there's good value in this Bradley Beal deal. We can go out and get him, and we don't have to give up much to get him because he's got a no-trade clause. Well, you know what? That is a disaster. There's no chance that Frank Vogel, the head coach, made that move, and there's no chance that James Jones, the general manager, made that move. This falls squarely on the person that CeCe just said has to voluntarily pay $104 million in luxury tax. You know what Bradley Beal gave you last night? 9 points, and he fouled out in an elimination game.
Yeah.
I mean, just absolutely brutal. This is one of the worst roster compositions we've seen in years, and this is not a new take. Everyone knew this, and especially during the new rules in the NBA, which do not allow for additions here. They have what they have. There's nothing that this team can do in terms of adding guys. They are absolutely scrapped. So the question becomes, which one happens first? Kevin Durant asks out or Devin Booker asks out?
Okay, so interesting points here by Chris Canty and Evan Smallman. So a couple of thoughts. Like, I get what Chris Canty was saying about Matt Ishbia coming in, being the new owner, and wanting to make a splash with his moves. And so I wonder, what was he thinking when he decided to get Kevin Durant? Yes, we know Kevin Durant can be a nuclear weapon when he's in the right situation. But also, we've only seen him in one right situation. Well, I guess this is his third, so I guess Matt Ishbia was thinking he's got a 50% chance. But we've only now seen him in one right situation in four spots at his career. And so Kevin Durant is a guy that doesn't necessarily demonstrate he can be the guy. Now, he can be the guy as best player on the team, but he can't lead your team. And you also have to worry, if he becomes unhappy, is he going to want to just roll out and try to go somewhere else? So there's that. Then you wonder, what was he thinking, he being Matt Ishbia, in bringing in Bradley Beal? What has Bradley Beal demonstrated to you throughout his career that says, oh, this is a guy that can be a difference maker for us? He's been in Washington all that time. He got all that money and didn't lead them to anything. So what makes you think that this is a guy that can be a difference maker for your franchise? For the life of me, I can't understand it. I really don't get it. Like, he hadn't shown anything. And also, what makes you think, and if you're Isaiah Thomas and you were involved in that, what makes you think that those two play styles and those two players mesh together? I really don't know. That's just odd to me. And then Kevin Durant was there first. So if you're Kevin Durant, did Matt Ishbia and Isaiah Thomas and James Johnson, did they come to you and consult you about the Bradley Beal move, as we often see front office people do for superstars in the modern day NBA? Did they? And if they did, why would you sign off on that? Haven't you learned that just trying to stack super teams doesn't really get it done? You got to get a team that has chemistry and a team that works well together and a team that's well coached. That doesn't really get it done. I mean, if you look at it, now you go back and look at the Phoenix Suns. They unloaded Chris Paul. They unloaded DeAndre Ayton. And that threesome of DeAndre Ayton, Chris Paul, and Devin Booker took you to the finals. Now they didn't get it done and win the championship for you, but you got to the finals with them. Now you have this threesome here and you're getting swept out in the first round. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but you know, it is what it is. When you talk about that luxury tax, $104 million luxury tax, next season, Kevin Durant scheduled to make about $52 million. Bradley Beal scheduled to make $50 million. And Devin Booker scheduled to make $53 million. So a total of $155 million, give or take, on three guys on that roster. So you've got a $205 million payroll. Three men are taking up $155 million of it, and you're still paying $104 million luxury tax. For what? You heard Canty ask the question, how do you justify this when you're getting swept out in the first round? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but that's just me. Then you heard at the end of that segment, Evan Smallman asked the question, who's going to ask out first? Devin Booker or Kevin Durant? I would wager Kevin Durant, because if I'm Devin Booker, why am I asking out? This is my team. I've been the guy here since I came out of college. This is my team. This is my home. I already have ties to the community. I'm comfortable here, blah, blah, blah. Make this team work. Get rid of this guy if you need to. Now, Bradley Beal's got a no trade clause. Why they gave him a no trade clause, I have no idea. I don't know why anyone would give Bradley Beal a no trade clause. He's already making way too much money for a guy who hasn't done enough in the league. And I'm not ever trying to say that a guy shouldn't get paid if somebody's willing to pay it to him. But what I'm saying is, I don't know why anybody would give this guy a supermax deal. I wouldn't. But anyway, so he's getting a supermax deal and he's got a no trade clause. That's ridiculous. For what? So now you're stuck with him, because even if you could get rid of him, I doubt anybody is taking that deal. So it's likely that if anyone is moving on, it's going to be Kevin Durant. And there he goes again, wandering some more. But let's go to the final segment from the show and let's talk about that.
That contract is one of the worst in professional sports, F. Like, it's one of the worst. And here's the thing. Like, it's not as if we can use injuries as an excuse with this trio. I mean, think about it. For Bradley Beal, this is the most games he's played in since 2020-2021 season. For Kevin Durant, this is the most games he's played in since the 2018-2019 season when Golden State lost to the Toronto Raptors. Devin Booker, same thing. The most games he's played in a couple of years. Like, they've had an opportunity to play together. And this team had a plus-minus of minus 51 when they were on the court together during this series. Think about that. That trio had a plus minus of minus 51 when they were on the court throughout this series. That just tells you that even when they're there, they don't know how to play together. You've heard grumblings about how Kevin Durant is not happy with the system and the role that he's been relegated to. They're asking him to post up in the corner more than he would like to, running the offense with high pick and roll. That's not really what he prefers. And so I think that there is a disconnect when it comes to what the stars want to do versus how the coach is telling them they have to win. And so without that level of buy-in, I just don't see how this team gets significantly better. Without being able to overhaul the roster and develop a bench, I don't see how they get significantly better. So there's not a lot of room to improve this team within the margins because of the tax constraints, which is why I think by far the more likely of the two scenarios is them blowing it up as opposed to running it back.
Man, so Imagine that. You got this type of talent on the team, but you can't make it work. Guess who's going to end up probably being the scapegoat there? Frank Vogel, because it's the NBA and it's a players league, and it's much easier to get rid of a coach than a player that you have under contract. So that's probably what's going to happen. But the other problem is, again, what are you going to do about Kevin Durant? What are you going to do about him? So now the new thing is that apparently Kevin Durant is not happy with how he's been used in Phoenix. So here it is, quote, "Meanwhile, Durant, among the best scorers in NBA history, was not always happy with how he was used. Sources briefed on the matter told The Athletic that Durant never felt comfortable with his role in Phoenix's offense alongside Booker and Beal this season. Those sources said Durant had persistent issues with the offense, feeling that he was being relegated to the corner far too often and not having proper designs to play to his strengths, as the offense was built around pick and rolls, etc., etc." So is Kevin Durant ever going to be happy? He's got to understand that this is professional basketball. This is not just a pickup game. It seems like all he ever wants to do is go out and hoop. And it's great that he's a hooper. It's great that he's a great hooper. But there's more to it than that on the professional level. So I touched on this earlier. This is what kind of throws me off with KD. He doesn't ever seem to be happy with the way he's used. But the funny thing is, when he first got to Golden State, he was ranting and raving about the beautiful basketball they play, on how they have a system and how they move the ball and blah, blah, blah. Now, by the time he gets out of there, then it's he has a complaint with how they play because it's too system-based. And once you start moving along in the playoffs and get further and further, teams know how to deal with that and you need more iso ball. It seems like KD just wants to play one-on-one all the time. And we get it. You're an elite one-on-one player. Fantastic. But there's a lot more to the NBA than that. And I'm not sure why, for a guy who's been in the league this long and done as much as he has done and is as accomplished as he is, doesn't seem to understand that. It's not about just going out and hoop it. I just don't get it. So he wants more ISO. He loves the beautiful basketball. The beautiful basketball is not beautiful anymore. Now he's playing in a system with a lot of high pick and roll, etc. He's relegated to the corner. Again, you've been in the league a long time. You've watched these guys play. You also know how Frank Vogel coaches. You didn't look at any of that and say, this might not be the best situation for me, but you demanded a trade, and I don't think at the time he had a no-trade clause, so he kind of had to go where they sent him. So, see, again, another example of the grass not always being greener. This is kind of what happens. I just don't get it. So here's another question. If Kevin Durant demands out, he wants to trade again, he wants to move on again, he wants to continue his traveling ways, let's say that, where in the league would he be happy? Where would he be happy? Miami, maybe? I saw something earlier today saying that in 2016, before he went to the Warriors, Eric Spoelstra told him that they could unlock his efficiency just like they did for LeBron James. Now, that would be interesting, him playing in Miami, but and maybe he could lead Miami to a championship. That's a team that gets down. But then you got to wonder, if he gets to Miami and Jimmy Butler's still there, can they coexist? Because Jimmy Butler is a dog and Kevin Durant isn't. I'm just going to say that. I'm not going to say anything else. I'm not going to insult the guy or anything like that. But he's not a dog like Jimmy Butler is. And Jimmy Butler is a guy that if he doesn't feel like his teammates are working up to the same level that he is, he's going to let him know. And so I don't know if Kevin Durant is built for that. Like we saw when Draymond got at him, he couldn't handle that. And it eventually led to him moving on. Now, I'm not saying that how Draymond handled it and how Draymond spoke to him was right. But we saw that that eventually led to a parting of the ways between KD and the Golden State Warriors. So the question is, could he deal with Jimmy Butler? Jimmy Butler is a real tough character. That's what got him out of Minnesota. And then he should have still been there in Philly. But anyway, yeah, Jimmy Butler is a tough guy. So I don't know if that would work if Jimmy Butler was still in Miami and KD got traded there. So I really don't know, man. I don't know what's the deal with KD. I don't know what can make KD happy. All I know is, in my estimation, this stuff is all taking a hit on his legacy, because no matter how anyone feels about it, the empirical evidence is starting to mount, right? He went to the finals one time outside of Golden State, and of course he lost. I think they lost 4-1 against LeBron and the Heatles. That was 2012. And as great a player as he's been, he's with Golden State, they win. But the empirical evidence is this: Golden State won before he got there, Golden State won after he left. And so you have that. So yeah, you can say that obviously he was a tremendous part, a key cog in those championship runs in the middle of 2015 and then 2022. 2021. So Golden State, again, they won before him, they won after him, and then they won with him. So it's not even like you could say, well, they wouldn't have won if they never got Kevin Durant. Well, clearly that's not the case. So you got that. Then he moves on to Brooklyn. They didn't get the job done there for a myriad of reasons. Then they move on to Phoenix. So far, he hasn't gotten the job done there for different reasons as well. But the problem is, when history goes back and look, history is rarely going to look at all the context that led to Kevin Durant not winning any more championships or not winning championships outside of Golden State. They're just going to say, well, he couldn't win if he wasn't in Golden State, and that's a problem. So I know this has been a long one, but I was really thinking about this a lot, and I did a lot of looking into it, and I'm like, man, this looks bad. This is really, I think, going to hurt Kevin Durant's legacy in the long run if he can't figure out how to win at least one more without Golden State and Steph and those guys. And I honestly don't think it's going to happen. And this is just an example of, we constantly laud the player empowerment, freedom of the players and player power and all this stuff, and go where you want to go, and oh, okay, cool. But again, the grass is not always greener on the other side. So leave your comments in the comment section. Can't wait to hear from you on this one. How do you think Kevin Durant's legacy is or is not affected by him continuing to lose outside of Golden State and not winning another championship? And do you think he will eventually win at least one more championship before he retires? Can't wait to hear from you. I'll be back with you next episode, and I'm out. Peace.